of the Public Relations Department, speaking presently at Crawford Hill, New Jersey, February 10th, 1965. This is the beginning of a series of interviews which is attempting to explain some of the background of Carl Jansky's work of the origins of radio astronomy and extraterrestrial radio sources. With me today is Mr. Al C. Beck at Crawford Hill, who knew Mr. Jansky and worked with him in the early days of radio astronomy.
Mr. Beck, were you connected with the studies of shortwave static research at the time of Jansky's work? And if you were, tell me of the circumstances of your professional relation with Jansky at that time.
Carl Jansky and I both reported for work to the Cliffwood Laboratory of Bell Telephone Laboratories in the summer of 1928. I was assigned to work with antennas, a group headed by E. Bruce, and L.R. Lowry also worked in this group. One of my assignments was to work on, construct, measuring equipment, including recorders, which we called field strength recorders, to record signals on the British transatlantic stations of the telephone company, and to study these signals as they were received on different antennas, make recordings of their strength. Carl Jansky was assigned at the same time to build similar equipment, similar recorders, but his interest was in recording sources of static and noise which might interfere with these signals, since the signal-noise ratio is the important thing. Previous to this time, Friis had done a considerable amount of static recording on long waves with rotating loop structures and with cardioid patterns obtained with loops and wire antennas. The equipment for this was in existence. Carl Jansky took over this equipment and operated it on long waves and proceeded to build what we call shortwave measuring equipment. For this, he drew on all of the facilities and knowledge that was available in the whole area of radio research at the time. Accurate measuring sets with of the double detection type, as we call them, or superheterodyne type, were available, were being used at the time, had been developed by Friis, Bruce, and others. Jensen was partly in on this. When we came, he built such a measuring set with a variable attenuator in the intermediate frequency, and when used with the recorder, this attenuator was built into the recorder. I built the same kind of equipment to record signals. We worked closely together. In many cases, each of us would make two parts and give the other one. I think I built the attenuator in his. I know he built the galvanometer assembly in mine because he built a pair of them. And so we were working closely together on the same kind of equipment, but for different purposes. Jansky also designed a zigzag antenna on wheels on a track, which was built from the work of Bruce, known as a Bruce Array. And Friis, who was head of all this, coordinated this work, worked closely with all of us at the time. It was a very close-knit group. We were very well aware of the others' work during this whole period.
Can I interrupt you here and ask you, what was your, were you personal friends with Jansky, or what was your more or less personal relationship?
We were very good personal friends. I have always liked and admired Jansky, in spite of the fact that he, even then, had some medical problems and was somewhat a temporary employee, and for a while, because of this, we were close friends. We played various games together, softball, table tennis, and were once co-champions and Monmouth County champions in table tennis.
We've
been in his home and so forth, and he had a table tennis, had a table for table tennis in his basement. In fact, we played some other teams around Monmouth County occasionally in his basement. And we were closely associated, both personally and in our work. And it happened, Carl Jansky and I both came with the same background. We had bachelor's degrees and had been teaching for a year, during which we had done some graduate work. We sometimes kidded each other because he called himself a physicist, and I was, of course, an engineer. And this was sometimes good for a little fun.
Coming back to Carl Jansky's profession, in his work here at Bell Labs, when he was on this static radio research, what was he trying to accomplish?
Well, the point was that Friis had achieved considerable success in finding the direction from which thunderstorms came at long waves, since most of the static there was due to thunderstorms, and beam antennas which aim toward England in this country, in general, aim away from most of the thunderstorm tracks. And this had led to part of the background for building a very large beam antenna as such, a long wire antenna, sometimes called a Beveridge antenna, up in northern Maine to get so that the direction of the interference was in the back of this antenna, and therefore he could get a better signal-to-noise ratio. This was existing information. Much of the work had been done on all of this, and Friis had been instrumental in a great deal of directional studies of static on long waves. He therefore assigned Jansky to investigate sources of static and noise on short waves, where we could get much better beam antennas and determine what direction static came from to help the signal-noise ratio on the transatlantic telephone system, which was very important to the whole Bell system transatlantic traffic.
Did Jansky actually accomplish this work, and did he document it?
Yes, I would think so, in some of his publications. That was his main assignment, his main job, and his main interest.
Well, what was the approximately the time in which he discovered that some of the signals that he was getting were not from terrestrial sources? When did that occur?
Well, this, of course, was a long, slow process. And this sort of grew in his mind and in all of the minds. There were some background things that tended to point to it. He built this antenna, which rotated once every 20 minutes, and he recorded the noise output by tuning to a channel where there were, as far as possible, no interfering radio signals. He had been doing this for some time and had correlated this with the existing weather data on the location of thunderstorms. And at these frequencies, thunderstorms were less troublesome and had to be closer to bother, and there were frequent times when one heard other noises. Some of these were various man-made interferences, some of them were unknown. And it was not possible or simple to separate these. It was often, you could tell thunderstorm static because of the discrete crashes that are associated with a lightning flash. But there were other sounds in there, very definitely, unknown things of a number of types, certainly, and Jansky started a very thorough and careful study of these sources and what they were doing.
When he first discovered this, what year was this? Was this 1928, 29?
No. This is carefully documented as to date in the early history of radio astronomy and his progress reports, and the dates are given there, and rather than try to remember them, my memory is it's nearer 31.
Mm-hmm.
It came in 28. But these dates are given, and it's in that.
It happened over a period of time that he kept on receiving these signals, and he became more and more aware that the source for this noise was not terrestrial.
Yes, although that took that was a long history that was associated with a lot of other people. One little clue to that we realized later, although I don't know that we realized it at the time, was I was connected closely with, and it was one of the reasons that I perhaps was very much interested at the time, accompanied by the fact that Carl Jansky's office was directly across from mine, and we discussed this at great length over a long period, often.
Does this mean that he was very interested in this discovery? And
later on, when this first came, yet. I don't know whether it meant that he'd continue it. My opinion is that he didn't want to continue it. We'll come to that later.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the point.
That's the point. We'll come to it later.
All right. Well, let me ask you this, the surrounding temperament of the laboratories at this time.
believe he was, personally, just an interest.
You don't? Well, was the temperament at the laboratory at this time such that it would have been of interest for him to continue this work?
Probably not.
Why? What is the reason for this?
Well, there didn't seem to be, later on looking at this, there didn't seem to be any immediate Bell system application for such information. And after all, we were in applied research, and somebody was paying our salaries from the telephone income, and we had to stick somewhat to our netting, although we had unusual freedom to do pure research in many ways, as, of course, has always been the case in the Bell Labs. And we were perhaps even more so than many of the other places. And I think had there been any interest in it, it might have been done. It's my personal opinion that Carl didn't want to. Now, this is, of course, is very much of a moot question. But Carl had, after all this work, and very cleverly associated with a fixed direction in space, and published an article that it was apparently of extraterrestrial origin. He felt he had accomplished something of considerable importance and was very proud of it. He then, to my knowledge, in my opinion, felt that he had done what was necessary from his point of view if they wanted further information on this line. And I'm not sure he was convinced that there was more information to be had at the time, to be honest with you, from personal recollection, talking with him. He went on with other things, I think, largely at his own choice.
Well, getting back now to people at the laboratories here, I understand that in the early 30s, this was printed on the first page of the New York Times, and furthermore, Jansky was given a radio interview with WJZ. Mm-hmm. Do you recall at that time what the attitude of the management here was towards that publicity?
Yes, at least on our part, and I'm sure on Friis's part, we were very happy about it, and we thought this was a very considerable achievement, that it was a very important piece of information, scientifically, and he had full support from all concerned, so far as I know.
Does that mean that the manager would have been willing to continue this sort of work, since it was given this publicity, and at least writers and news commentators thought it was important at that time that management share this opinion?
I think they did, to the extent that we all felt, including Carl Jansky, that this was it, he had found this, but to go on with it at that time, probably it was questionable whether you would learn much more than that here was this noise. We did not at that time have any notion of the present state of radio astronomy, of course, didn't know any of this, wasn't known until years later. And at the time there was a strong feeling on the part of most of us that this was it, and one goes on from there.
Yeah. Well, now let's get really to the point. Did Jansky want to go on with this work?
Well, it's my memory that he didn't particularly.
What is the reason for this?
He felt that his work with the Bell Laboratories was for the purposes of developing communication for the Bell system, and that this at the moment was a side issue that did not contribute directly to the communication.
Actually, how does one explain the fact that he worked for so many years and pointing his antenna to pointing his antenna towards this direction, which was not local noise or thunderstorms, and coming up with the discovery that this was not a terrestrial type of noise, he spent such a great deal of time doing this. How does one explain the fact that he did it, and yet he wasn't too interested and didn't want to pursue this type of noise?
Actually, this never was, in his work during all those years, his major job. This was a side issue, and a fallout, if you wish. And in reading his notebooks, which I have done very carefully and thoroughly over these years, there is almost no reference to it whatsoever. It was a minor part of his work during this entire time. He never deliberately pointed an antenna in these directions or attempted to. He had an antenna which scanned 360 degrees. He traced this noise on it, showed with the elementary astronomy principles that it came from a fixed direction in space, located that direction, published this article on it, and then went on as he had been with all the other work he had been doing. His notebook shows a great deal more effort along other lines all during this period from the time of 1928 on, and not much along this line.
Do you suspect that the reason he wasn't interested in pursuing this was the fact that he was just satisfied in knowing that this noise
came from this in this direction and wasn't terrestrial, and he wanted to get on with the job of static.
Of the whole job, of other things. He worked with many other things, antenna rays. Actually, his notebook shows that over the years following this, that occasionally as he was working with arrays of rhombic antennas and other antennas, every once in a while he casually turned to a vacant frequency and steered the antenna array to check that this noise was still coming from this direction and was about the same. And he recorded frequently over the years after that that the cosmic static as such still is the same as it used to be.
In your recollection?
To a certain extent he did go on.
Yeah. Well, in your recollection then, did he make any formal approach to management here to continue this work?
I am convinced that he did not.
He did not.
He, in talking with him, being very close to him, I never heard of any such a thing. I have talked with Fries about it. Fries has no recollection of any such thing. I never heard anything about it in any way, shape, or manner closely associated with him. And actually, after this, I was very closely associated in other ways. When he finished the work with this rotating array, I took over the rotating array structure, took down the Bruce antenna, and mounted an antenna of my own on it, and used it for several years myself.
What year was this now?
I would have to check the notebooks. It was 3 or 4 years after his work with discovering this. But I built a different antenna on the same rotating structure, and I used it for several years for different antennas and antenna testing personally.
When was he taken off this static research job?
I don't think he was ever taken off it. As I say, for years following, he continued every once in a while, checked that it was there. He went on to other work. One of the other jobs that he did after that was one that, because I had another project, took over one that I had been working on a comb antenna, so-called, on an array antenna that I had been working with. He wrote a memo on as he took it over. And I think that he was never taken off this kind of work as such. He felt that he had finished it and of his own free will did the other work, which had been very strong and which he was doing during the whole time.
Was there
the notebooks show no discontinuities, no changes in his effort, simply taking on other jobs and going right on with the same thing he had done since he came with the company in 1928. His interest in circuits and in integrating for this kind of noise measurement and in measuring sets was very strong. He always worked with it. He continued to do so. I don't believe that he was directed to change.
Would you say that the impetus for him to stop work in radio astronomy came from him or his boss or from both of them?
I don't know. I feel that he was a party to it, definitely.
But would you say that his boss or higher-ups at any time had told him to discontinue this work?
I don't believe so. Not to my knowledge, certainly.
Well, I'd like to know, Mr. Beck, I'd like to know something about Mr. Jansky himself. You mentioned you were close friends with him. Let's talk about his professional ambitions first. Do you recall, I mean, what did he want to accomplish? He was a young man between, between the ages of 22 and 40, throughout the span that you knew him. Over the period of time, as you talked to him, it's hard to say actually what man's goal in life, what he wants to do, it changes over a period of time, but professionally, as an engineer, what did he want to accomplish, particularly from the age of 28 onward? What were his ambitions?
Well, I might interject just one other thing in this previous discussion, that these were, after all, Depression days, which money was exceedingly hard to come by, and that this might have colored some of the whole feeling, because we weren't even working full-time during the Depression. This was a very difficult time financially, of course, for the Bell System and for all of us personally. And there might have been colored a little by this, but I still feel that it was Jansky's own decision, partly this way. Now, as to Jansky's personal ambitions and so on, yes, we discussed that in detail, and I think that brings in one other point that perhaps should be tied fairly closely to this, and that is that John Pfeiffer set out to write a book on radio astronomy and to get this history and so forth, the changing universe, and this is one of the important things in this whole background. And when John Pfeiffer first came to Homedale, in preparing this, he told us that he wanted information, of course. He spent a day with us. I gave him pictures and a great deal of information in this book, and so did the others here at Homedale. We had long session in Fries's office. But John Pfeiffer made a statement, something to the effect that you can't write a good book or have a good play or movie unless there is some sort of a conflict in it. And he felt that the conflict that he wanted to write up in his book at that time, in my memory of what he said, was that here Jansky had done an excellent job, a very outstanding job. He had shown that there was radio signals, radio energy arriving at his antenna from outside the Earth. Now, this was something that, as we know now, was of tremendous importance. And that, therefore, he published this. He had accomplished his aim in doing this, and that no one in science picked this up, or in effect, as I remember his saying to us, the scientist said, "Oh, you're just a radio engineer. Go run along with your radio toys. That's not astronomy." And it was years before astronomers picked this up or had anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought that would make a very interesting thing for his book. However, apparently, when he talked to the scientists, he changed his opinion and got talked out of this or something, I don't know what, because it didn't turn out to be the conflict in the book.
Mm-hmm.
However, the conflict in the book came to be, to a certain extent at least, and has been considered to be, the fact that Jansky did not continue his work. And that is why this is became this. Pfeiffer promised us that he would show us this text before he published it. He did not keep that promise, and none of us ever saw this and were horrified when it did come out this way.
It's Pfeiffer, freelance writer.
Freelance writer, working for it. Now, Jansky was only 28 years old in 1933, quoting from Pfeiffer's book, and there was a great deal more research to be done. I don't think Jansky thought there was a great deal more to be done at that date, personally.
In radio astronomy.
In radio astronomy. He had a lot more research to be done, but for purposes of radio communications and telephone company, which was his interest. And his interest always was strong in circuits and components and measuring methods. He was an expert on measurements. That had made this possible. And he said, in fact, he was to spend very little time doing research in the field he had created. 4 years later, he made a few observations, tuning in on Milky Way static and noting that the longer the radio waves received, the stronger the signals were.
You're quoting from the book now.
I'm quoting from the book.
Yes.
Now, a lot of these things, he did much more than 4 years later. He had in his notebook are many more things than Pfeiffer knew about when he wrote this. This is interjected. Now, this is a mixture of book and interjection, but it's informal, so. And it says, remarkable thing is that he accomplished so much in so brief a period. That we agree with. He had spent only about a year doing intensive work on static from the stars, and that was on a half-time basis. Actually, he spent more than a year, but it never was as much as a half-time basis. I don't agree with a lot of his analysis. But then he says, rarely has a pioneer stopped at the very point where it's beginning to get exciting. Well, this is quite the contrary. It was not getting exciting. It was all finished and done in his mind, in my opinion.
I might interject that the Reader's Digest made the same statement. He said, his bosses told him to stop, and this is one of the sources of problems here. Do you consider this a source of misinformation?
Yes, I consider that misinformation, personally.
Where did they get this from?
I don't know, although I suspect I know, and we'll come to just a little of this here.
Okay.
I don't know, and then again, this is perhaps very confidential as far as Yaz is concerned. The point is that this information has come largely, to my knowledge, from his brother Cyril Jansky, Jansky and Bailey, who for some reason seems to have a great deal of bad feeling toward the Bell Laboratories and has made some statements and done some things that we feel are completely incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to some of them here. We think that that is the source. I don't know.
Incidentally, that would explain it.
And just why, I don't know. Incidentally, I understand his brother...
No one in the Bell Laboratories would...
No.
Make a statement.
No, I'm sure it has come from him. He has published some things of this nature. Challenge wrote him, and he didn't even answer Preece. Preece wrote him a letter.
Do you know the names of these publications? These
yes, it was. He wrote an article in which some of this is stated. I'm going to look this up in more detail. In the radio astronomy issue of the Proceedings of the Institute of Radio Engineers, and that is January 1958.
Was he an engineer himself?
Oh, yes. His father was an engineer and a professor at the University of Wisconsin and some other schools.
His brother is still alive at the moment.
His brother is still alive and is a partner in Jansky and Bailey, a very prominent concern in Washington in the radio field, and was once a member of the Federal Communications Commission.
Is that right?
And is a very well-known person in all of this, of course, and has had a good deal to do with it. Now, John Pfeiffer said, I visited the Home Dell Laboratory primarily to find out why. I spent the entire day with him and gave him most of the material when he was here, to interject
mm-hmm.
again.
Yeah.
I never heard him even question why Jansky stopped. He hadn't thought of that at that time, in my opinion. So I think this is not a very good statement in his book. Again, my personal opinion. According to one explanation, he was simply not interested in the stars. As an engineer, and he always called himself a physicist just to another country, thing,
mm-hmm.
he expected to stay with the problem as long as it proved of practical importance and no longer. He had detected a new type of static, discovered where it came from, and considered it merely one of many effects that had to be allowed for in designing more efficient radio telephones. And there's some reality to this. Then he puts in quotes in here, this statement, which I think is interesting. When the excitement died down, we thought things over, comments a radio engineer who worked with Jansky for many years.
Who was this radio engineer?
I don't know who this radio engineer is. I was the one who said the main things to him at the time, but we all said things to him of this nature when he was here.
Mm-hmm.
This could be any one of us here at Homedale, my opinion. We decided there was no reason to go further. The noise figure for space had been established. We knew how much static to expect. We were working for a public utility, and our purpose is to improve telephone services. We decided that the research should be done somewhere else, at universities or in government laboratories. Of course, if Carl had wanted to, he could have kept up his work. But I think he agreed with the decision. He didn't regret it. And this quote is essentially my personal opinion, and it was given to him when he was here, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Although his major purpose was just to learn the whole thing in our memory, not to know why he stopped.
Mr. Beck, let me ask you this. Did you consider Jansky a good engineer?
Excellent. Had great respect for him, technically.
Was he a dedicated man?
Dedicated man.
I mean, would he be the sort of person to stay after 5 o'clock?
Yes, and many times he did.
Was he, would you consider him a person with scientific curiosity?
Yes, very great scientific curiosity.
Uh-huh. Well,
and a man we all liked, both for all of his personal attributes and because of his scientific ability.
Wouldn't that sort of person tend to want to pursue a study in which he thought no one ever discovered before?
Well, I'm not sure he felt that there was any more to learn.
Well,
he established that there it was, and that was it. And he didn't know there was any more. It was years later before it was discovered there was anything more. I think a great many other scientists in this country felt the same way, and it's why nothing was done on it outside the labs.
He had discovered radio sources coming from the direction of Sagittarius and center of the Milky Way. Did he also come up with a radio source from Cygnus A?
No, he did not know there was anything but this one. Never had any indication of anything else.
That's the
full
extent of his discovery of radio sources.
A sources, yes. That here was here were radio signals coming from a fixed direction of space. He never suspected any others, and I don't think there was anyone did until Grote Reber found them years later. Which is an interesting story in itself, and which Grote Reber has written in that same radio astronomy issue with a great deal of interest. I spent a day with Grote Reber a few years ago, great entertainment, and discussed this with him, and it was Grote Reber who wrote to Southworth suggesting that a copy of Jansky's antenna be put at Green Bank, a replica. And so Grote Reber was the source of the Bell Laboratory supplying this antenna to the National Radio Astronomy Observatory at Green Bank, West Virginia.
Did Carl Jansky, after 1933, did he ever consult on the subject of radio astronomy or pursue this work in his own time?
Not to my knowledge, although I know he did talk with Grote Reber. Grote Reber told me so about some things later on when Grote Reber contacted him. Grote Reber, who was interested in DX work, decided to look into this after reading Jansky's publication and built his famous parabolic telescope in his own backyard in Wheaton. And that is now at Green Bank across from Jansky's antenna. And I spent a day at Green Bank with Grote Reber and, on the background of all of this, and he told me he had talked with Jansky about it to get what information he could when he went into it.
But aside from this contact, Jansky essentially dropped radio astronomy.
Except that occasionally, over various times later, there are entries in his notebook that he found it to be the same as it was when he first discovered it, which would support the idea that this was it.
When was the next radio source found?
By Grote Reber.
By Grote Reber.
Yes, and this is detailed in his article in a very interesting way in the radio astronomy issue.
About what year was this?
Oh, I don't remember exactly, and I'm guessing, but I would say 37 or 38.
I see.
Did this perhaps have, nearer up toward 40.
Did this have any effect on Jansky wanting to continue work in radio astronomy?
Not to my knowledge.
Not
I
to your knowledge.
Jansky,
according to your opinion, was of the idea that radio sources come only, well, he only discovered one source of
one radio noise. Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't aware that the heavens were full of this.
Not at all.
And then Grote Reber came along several years later.
And discovered some other sources.
Discovered some other sources and discussed it with Jansky.
Yes.
But this still didn't entice Jansky to continue it.
I never heard that it did. If it did, I heard nothing about it.
Let me ask you this question, Mr. Beck. What was Jansky's feelings towards Bell Laboratories, both at the beginning when you first knew him and later on before his death?
As far as I know, he always had a pretty good opinion of the laboratories. I'm not sure about his brother Cyril's feeling, because Cyril had worked for the laboratory somewhat too, I believe.
What
yes.
What year was this now?
Early summers. This would be before 28, I think. I don't know. This I have no notion about, but I've heard, somewhere in the back of my memory is that he has been at times, he had worked with Bell Laboratory somewhat. I don't know if he's ever done any work under the firm name of Jansky and Bailey or not. I don't think so, but I don't know this.
Did he quit the laboratory?
I'm not sure that he quit. I think it may have been summer. I'm not sure of this. But to go on with this, as far as I know, his relations with the laboratory were good. Jansky was worried in the early years by the fact that he was only a temporary employee because of his health, and it was some time before he was on the permanent payroll because of health difficulties when he first came. He was, and I'm sure, always very loyal. He, well, at our company parties and so forth, he used to take part in skits and things of this kind, and I have never heard anything in the least of any feeling against the laboratory, even in his later years, personally, anything that he did. And we were a close-knit group at the time, and I think we all felt about the same about the whole thing. We griped about things naturally during the Depression and reduced pay and all this due to the shorter hours. You know, we all had these feelings, and we all talked about it, but it was common to the whole group, and he was very much one of the group. He took various out-of-hour courses. He always took an active part in our various things of this kind. He was very questioning. He frequently asked questions in discussion periods when we had a colloquium and so on, so much so that he got the nickname of Static from the rest of the boys. When he'd ask questions, sometimes somebody would say Static to him. Because of this. And all in good feeling. Mm-hmm. Always had a lot of respect for him and for his curiosity.
Yeah. I'm about finished with my questions here, but if there's anything you want to add, please
yes.
feel free to say anything.
I want to add one more thing.
Yeah.
A lot of this whole feeling of his desire to go on with it and of it being refused by the company, I think has come from outside, from his family. And the reason I think that is that it is quoted in Pfeiffer's book, and I'd like to comment on this because I was connected with it personally. In fact, so much so that I know when one of the men here, Crawford, asked his wife about it, and incidentally, for some years after his death, his wife lived in the next apartment to my mother in Red Bank, and I still knew her. Art Crawford asked her once if she'd ever heard Carl say anything to this effect, and her answer was, "You've read Pfeiffer's book, haven't you?"
No worries.
She never admitted that she had.
In other words, what you're saying is that she got her information from Pfeiffer's book.
Yes. Now, this right after this thing that I quoted about Jansky's feeling that he had found what there was to find and didn't regret going on with his other work, and it wasn't a change in work. He went on with what he was doing. He never was changed completely in his work for years after. There never was any direction to stop this and do something else. He went on with what he was doing. He just gave less time to this, which never was a half-time job even, in my opinion. Pfeiffer says, in response to that, but there is another side to the story. Jansky used to correspond regularly with his father, who had been an electrical engineer at the University of Oklahoma. I'm not sure about that. I know his father, I think his father was at one time at Wisconsin also. And excerpts from some of his letters indicate that he was not at all happy about leaving radio astronomy. For several years, he did all he could to convince his associates and superiors that the work was worth pursuing for practical reasons. Now, this is entirely from Cyril Jansky. We're sure. We never heard any of this. I never heard any of this. But his arguments failed to produce results. Perhaps Jansky himself was not convinced by them. More than anything else, he may simply have wanted to explore the new field for its own sake. A letter written in the spring of 1936 is particularly revealing. At that time, Jansky wanted to leave his position. He thought of working at the State University of Iowa, but only if he was given freedom to go ahead with his studies in radio astronomy. Of course, I would ask for the time and facilities to carry on my research, which would be more than I have had for the last 2 years. Jansky never made the move. He remained at the Bell Laboratories. I think this whole statement, my personal opinion, is false, and that the whole implication
You're
of this letter is false. I am saying
yes.
This now. I should say when I quoted now, but you can read the book later and check
yes.
on this.
I read this book.
This statement is here, and this is the main thing, apparently, that Cyril told them because he had this letter. It happens that at the time, Carl Jansky and I, having both been teachers, were teaching courses to the technical assistants here, working together very closely in these. In 1936, things were very bad at the laboratories. Between 34 and 36 were the worst years of the Depression. All of us had thought somewhat of finding something better if we could, because we felt that the laboratories had been pretty hard hit. We weren't getting very much money. We were looking for something better, of course. I did, too. I considered a job at some other places. I stayed, too. But the point is that Jansky did talk to the people at Iowa, State University of Iowa, the Iowa Experiment Station, and so on. He had a letter from them and was considering a job. He showed me that letter of the offer, although I never saw this that he wrote to his father. But I was fully aware of the connection with the University of Iowa. In fact, we were jointly thinking a little about it, about this kind of a job. And I want particularly to read this again. Quote,
but coming back to the point, you are not aware that Jansky and Carl Jansky ever made or wrote the statement that his superiors had prevented him from continuing study of radio astronomy and did not give him sufficient equipment. And
I don't believe he ever did. I want to quote what Jansky said in a letter to his father, which
yes.
is used here to prove something different entirely, in my opinion. Carl wrote, quote, "Of course I would ask for the time and facilities to carry on my research, which would be more than I have had for the last 2 years," unquote. He didn't say research in radio astronomy. I don't think he wanted to do research in astronomy. He wanted to do research on systems, equipment, and antennas. We talked this over together. We both did. There had been so little money available during the Depression in the Bell Laboratories that we were not able to get equipment to do things we wanted to do along that line. I don't believe Carl Jansky meant radio astronomy at all.
Do you believe Pfeiffer actually read these letters?
I think maybe Pfeiffer read that thing that he quoted. But I don't believe, I think he misinterpreted it.
What about the previous statement?
He never, in this statement, Carl never used the word anything about radio astronomy. He wanted to carry on his research. His research was not radio astronomy. It was in a different field entirely. It was in radio systems and communication. That's what he wanted to carry on at Ohio State.
Well, he didn't
Ohio
have
State.
Any problem on that account here.
Yes, he did have problems. We all did because of the Depression. We didn't get as much equipment as we needed, really, to do the things we wanted to do.
The equipment
we couldn't buy it. It was very hard to come by. This was a
Depression. At the University of Iowa where he was.
Well, we talked it over very much together. I don't know whether he actually went there or not. His feeling was, he said, "Of course I would ask for time and facilities to carry on my research," what he said, which is more than he had. His feeling was that he couldn't get them there either due to similar reasons. That's the main reason I think he didn't change, and it's the main reason I didn't, and I knew of this business at the time. So I don't believe that Pfeiffer drew the correct implications. I think Cyril has been misled by this, that they have drawn entirely false conclusions, and his wife only said, "Read the book."
Mm-hmm.
So I don't believe she heard any of this.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to add here?
Well, there's some more comments here in Pfeiffer's book,
well,
which I think are...
Well, tell me about Pfeiffer, perhaps your recollection of Jansky. Anything else you want to talk about?
Well,
Jansky, his illness or
his illness. Jansky, of course, knew
personal
that he was
relations
very
with
sick.
His co-workers or things like that.
His personal relations with his co-workers were always, to my knowledge, excellent. I don't remember anyone with whom he ever had any kind of a feud in any way.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the finest fellows personally that I have known.
Friendly sort of person?
Very friendly. He was good at athletics in spite of his physical difficulties, which were not the ones that finally killed him exactly. And he had others.
He was a good bridge player, too.
He was an excellent bridge player. He'd even played hockey on Wisconsin. Anything of this kind.
Yes. Yeah.
He was. He played bridge with some of the fellows here, although I never was, and I didn't know him in that respect. But in a lot of things, he was a competitor. He was anything he did well,
right.
No matter what.
Yeah.
He was the Monmouth County singles champion in table tennis himself.
Well, they
know he beat me in the semifinals.
No reason to suspect that in his latter part of his life. Of course, he died at the age of 44. That he was frustrated professionally. You are discarding this theory.
I don't think so. Although in his very later years, last year or two, his health was deteriorated very considerably. He, I know he talked openly about this with me more than once. He had severe high blood pressure, which was, of course, probably the reason for the stroke that finally killed him. Now, this developed. I'm not sure it was so bad when he came. I think it was, I don't remember, it was something else I think was one of the main physical difficulties when he first came with the company. This could be checked with medical because he was hired on a temporary basis due to his health then. But he developed a very severe case of hypertension, blood pressure. He talked to me about it. He went to specialists at the time, and they told him that he might have 10 years more life if he went to Duke University and took their special treatment for high blood pressure. It was the best then known in the country. He did go to the Duke University Hospital. They put him on a diet of rice and fruit juice and finally an ounce, a few ounces of meat a week. And a very, very strict diet, which he followed. He came to the company dinners and brought something like this to eat because he couldn't eat anything else. Sometimes we kidded him about it.
No.
And his health was bad, and he had a series of strokes before the final.
Just one final question, Mr. Beck. Do you think that Jansky knew the significance of what he was doing when he actually made these discoveries?
I think he felt that it was very significant.
But he didn't...
To find this as, he didn't realize it was going to be this kind of a science. I can remember talking with him at the time he was made a fellow of the Institute of Radio Engineers. And we discussed a little bit, was it because of this or his other work? And I think he felt that it was for all of the work that he had done. He had contributed quite a little to the methods of measuring noise, integrating signals, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And he was honored by being elected a fellow of the Institute of Radio Engineers, their highest award. And
I was referring to radio astronomy now. Did you realize the significance of that at the time?
I don't know, but my feeling is that, yes, he felt that it was important.
It was important.
And that this was a considerably important type of contribution in many ways, that it had scientific use, but that he would not go along those lines, someone else should, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That he had his other work in which he was very much interested and got a great deal of satisfaction from his other work.
Did he at all ever attempt to explain what the causes of these signals were?
Not to my knowledge.
Not to your knowledge.
That here they were, they came in, and here's how they behaved, and proved that they did come from space. This could be, I'm pretty sure that in his original paper there is not any attempt to speculate about the source of it.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Beck. It was very nice talking with you.